my name is Juliet, and I'm a survivor of sexual assault. On a Saturday night at the end of my first year of college, my friends and I went out to our favorite club. I had not been anxious to go out lately because I was still upset over my first true love breaking my heart only 2 months before. But my friends convinced me that I need to start having fun and forget about him, so I took their advice and joined them for the evening. Our group of 10 arrived and walked into the best party of the year. Everyone in the club, including me, was dancing and having fun. Since there were only about 2,400 students at our school, I knew or recognized just about everyone there. I spotted an attractive guy that I had met only once in a friend's room a few months before. He recognized me as well and introduced himself. We danced and exchanged small talk about what we were studying and where we were from. He was polite, and I felt comfortable with him. Throughout the course of the evening, we continued to dance and talk. We even kissed a couple of times. As the night was winding down, I could see that he was intoxicated, although I had only had 2 beers. When everyone began to leave the club, he invited me back to his room. I did enjoy his company and thought it would be fun to hang out with him just a little longer. At the same time, I was aware of what could happen to me if I went to an all-male dormitory after hours. So before I invited him to my place, I decided to do a background check on him. I asked my friends what they knew about this guy. Everyone had good things to say about him, except for one girl who told me that she had heard he was a violent drunk. But another girl jumped into the conversation and reassured me that it was just a rumor and that she knew him very well from her hometown. Overall, I felt okay about the situation and invited him over to my dorm where we could be with all of my friends. Unfortunately, when the cab dropped us off at my dorm, my friends were so intoxicated that all of them went to their own rooms and passed out, leaving me alone with my date. At this point, I began to feel uncomfortable because I did not know him well, and I had lost the security that I thought my friend's presence would provide. He made friendly jokes about my friends and suggested we go up to my room and see what they were doing on the third floor. I knew that my roommate would be in our room, so even if no one else was hanging out on the third floor, at least we would not be alone. We went up, but found no one around. To make matters worse, as soon as I walked into my room with a date, my roommate assumed that we wanted to be alone. I asked her to stay, but she thought I was just trying to be polite and made a quick exit. He sat on my bed and began to kiss me, but this time I did not enjoy it as much as I had before. I pulled away and tried to talk to him, but he had had other plans. I could tell by the look in his eyes and the way that he was grabbing me that I was in danger. I told him to let go of me and to stop grabbing me so forcefully. In seconds, he had managed to take off my shirt and overalls and everything underneath, as well as his own clothing. It seemed he had done this before. I remembered the words of the girl who said he was a violent drunk, and I was terrified. He was bigger than I was, he was stronger than I was, and I was too afraid to scream. He began touching my body in ways that made me cringe. I begged him, "No, stop, please." He did not listen and proceeded to penetrate me. I told him, "No," again. He began to curse at me and screamed, "You don't want to fucking have sex with me?" When I cried, "No, not at all," he called me a bitch, and then he smacked me on my right thigh. I tried to lock my legs together and use my hands to push him away. I did get him to stop having vaginal intercourse with me. However, I sometimes wish that I had let him continue so as to get it over with, because for the next hour and a half, what I experienced was a bigger nightmare than I ever could have imagined. I put up as much of a fight as I could, but I didn't scream because I was afraid of what else he would do to me. He continued to sexually and physically abuse my body in every way that he could. To this man, stop meant more, and tears meant I liked it. When he finally left that evening, I did not feel much of anything, not even the developing bruises I had on my chest, legs, and arms. I sat on my bed feeling numb. When my roommate came back, I began to tell her what had happened, and she cried, telling me that I had just been raped. Strangely, I did not believe her. That can never happen to me, I thought to myself. I am a strong-minded woman who would never fall for a guy's game. However, I did not feel right in any sense of the word. I felt that my mind and body had been completely violated. At first, I told only my 3 closest friends. They urged me to press charges, but I didn't think I could. I truly felt that I was somehow exaggerating. I thought that it could not be as serious as my friends believed, even though I had been very clear about saying no. He had chose to ignore my requests. The more I flashed back to the night, the more I began to find strength within myself to report the rape. I knew that I had two options, to tell the city police and go through a long criminal trial where I might face being victimized by a defense attorney and the news media, while my assailant would likely be found innocent, as so often happens in rape cases. Or I could report it to school security, where the trial would be resolved more quickly and with less publicity. I chose to report the crime to the college in hopes that my assailant would be removed from the campus as soon as possible. The Office of Residential Life told me the hearing would be in 1 month. In the months before the campus administrative hearing, I did some investigating of this man on my own. By asking around, I discovered that he had been a student at the school for only 2 months, and in that short time, he had sexually assaulted at least 3 other women, all of whom told me of their assaults. The women agreed to tell the dean of students, who would be the deciding judge in the administrative hearing. At this hearing, my assailant told 3 different versions of what had happened. Meanwhile, I stuck to my story consistently, never wavering from the detailed security report in which I had first described the assault. There was only one true account of what happened that spring night in 1995, and it was obvious to everyone that it was mine. Found guilty of both sexual and physical abuse by the administration, my attacker was given an insignificant punishment. Social probation for 1 year. The college allowed him to continue to represent our school as an athlete, and he was allowed to continue living on campus. The administration asked only that he not be involved in student government. They told him not to do it again and suggested that maybe he should seek some sort of counseling. Then we were dismissed. Needless to say, I was appalled at the minimal sanction. I spent the next 6 months writing to the school paper. I spoke with the vice president of the college and the dean of students, who both responded in the same way. He is not a threat to the campus community, Juliet. Now let's keep quiet about this. I began to tell everyone I knew about the assault and the college's lenient response. I didn't care that the school had tried to silence me. I was determined to tell the truth. To add insult to injury, I was faced with my attacker every day after the assault, every single day. Unless I decided to stay in my room, which I often did. Even though I was the victim of a violent assault, I was the one being punished and imprisoned. I was the one considered a threat and an embarrassment. I tried to go back to campus the following semester, but with my assailant still there and no support from the school, it was impossible for me to continue. In the end, I left, and the school provided safe harbor for the rapist. The following year, I transferred to another university far away, hoping to get a fresh start. But I could never forget what had been done to me, nor did I want to. I was and still am determined to improve accountability, to change laws, policies, and protocols so that no one will ever have to go through what I went through. I learned of a peer group called Sexual Health Awareness and Rape Education, SHARE, in which students undergo a semester of training to educate others on sexual assault and risk reduction. This was exactly what I needed to get involved in. I was tired of feeling badly for myself and was ready to use my experience to help others. Being a SHARE peer was the most empowering experience of my life. It allowed me to educate myself as well as others and to make new friends who were also dedicated to the cause. Facilitating workshops was the most difficult part of my healing process. At each workshop, students, both male and female, consistently blamed women for sexual assaults. Students blamed the woman for what she was wearing or for how much she drank, implying that she was asking for it. They criticized her for saying no only 5 times instead of 20. If she didn't really want it, they wondered, why didn't she scream or hurt him? I often heard, what do women expect? They shouldn't go out and drink in the first place. And it's not really rape because she brought him back to her room and she was flirting with him all night. As part of the workshop, the class read a sexual assault scenario that had actually occurred on campus, a scenario very similar to my own experience. After students read it, I asked how many people thought that the woman had been raped. Generally, in a class of 30 people, No more than 5 raised their hands. I wanted to scream or cry out of hurt and frustration, and sometimes I did. I used all my powers of persuasion in that short time to challenge students to examine their own beliefs about sexual assault. It was clear that some students were never going to change how they felt, but there were others who came to me after class to thank me for teaching them things about rape that they'd never really known. Often, students shared with me their own experiences of sexual assault. My teaching and advocacy were not limited to share workshops. I reinforced these issues at every opportunity to friends and acquaintances. Our society knows little to nothing about what sexual assault is. Many people do not know the definitions of assault, and very few know what to do when faced with an assault or rape crisis. Furthermore, people who are knowledgeable about these issues do not have much support in this country. I now work at the college I transferred to as the program director for sexual assault and relationship violence at the Office for Sexual Health and Violence Prevention. People often say, "That's great, how noble of you." But in the same breath, they try to tell me that sexual assault will never go away, that it is just how men are. Students and adults still often label as slutty all women who say they are raped, believing that women claim rape when they regret having sex. Many sympathize with the innocent guy who must endure the reputation of being a rapist. I rarely encounter people who believe the woman. When I tell people that 1 woman in 4 will be a victim of rape or attempted rape by the time she graduates college, I get laughed at as if I'd told a funny joke. Yet it is my privilege to educate people about sexual assault, to tell my story, and to show other women that there are people who will believe and support us, that we all can be survivors. Each time I tell my story, I wish more than anything that I could conclude by saying that my attacker is now in jail or that he has sought help and is no longer a danger to any of us. Instead, I finish by saying that he was never given an appropriate sanction for the acts he committed against me. I believe that raising awareness, showing support, and educating others will lead to fewer sexual assaults, and I believe such efforts will give women the strength and encouragement they need to report their assaults. Ultimately, this will lead to more convictions as potential jurors are freed from the myths that have prevailed our society. I now know what I want people in this world to learn from me, that I will not let anyone blame me or punish me for being a victim, that I remained strong even when it seemed hopeless, and I never doubted what I knew to be the truth.